Well, good evening. Welcome to a new edition of The Beacon. Well, it's kind of unusual to meet the evening.
It was weird when you said evening. I almost corrected you.
I know.
And then I remembered. Oh,
we're on in the evening now, 7 to 8 p.m. right here on Chris Radio.
Yep.
And you can get to us if you don't already. Well, obviously you do.
You're
if
here.
You're listening.
Yes, you're here.
But if you want to tell your friends in that, it's going to be at our website, www.chicagolighthouse.org. Look for the Chris Radio link. And then you'll be able to catch up with what's going on The Beacon Show. How are you, Lainey Williams?
It's been a crazy week.
I bet you it has. You made it back from
California.
California.
I did. I went out and had an early Thanksgiving with my family over the Veterans Day weekend, the long
that
weekend.
That tofu turkey?
I didn't have tofu turkey. my aunt did Thanksgiving this year. And, you know, my family's so great. She was very conscientious of my dietary,
So
she made me a nice little cauliflower dish with, like, vegan cheese. And it was all mine. I was very, like, and I love cauliflower. I eat it raw by the handful. So this was very, very good
for
me.
Well, I told you my recipe, but you didn't like it.
Well, it sounded
good. Because it had too much butter.
Yeah, it sounds good. I just wouldn't eat it. But
yeah, I know.
It sounds delicious.
Oh, yeah.
I can still appreciate it. I mean, it's like when you see a good-looking person and you're like, well, I'm married, so I can't think they're good-looking. You know what? You can think they're good-looking even if you're married. You just can't touch them.
You just can't touch.
Same
That's
deal
right.
with being a vegan.
Looking,
I can still
no
think it's a good-looking dish without touching it.
So for Christmas, I'm moving ahead here.
Yeah, let's go.
We're going to have, I'm making cauliflower the Polish way.
Yes.
With the, well, you know, with the butter and the breadcrumbs
and
in
the
it.
The Rice Krispies?
Sweetened, no.
Oh, the cornflakes?
Cornflakes.
Cornflakes, yes.
Sweet and sour cucumbers.
Ooh.
And then we're going to have we're going to probably have turkey and ham, depending on how I feel. Yeah, well,
yeah.
It depends on how I feel, too.
Okay.
So, I'll have to go get a procedure done probably between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Oh,
you
boy.
Know. But, you know, hopefully this will be the last one.
I hope so.
So, and you, what are you doing for Christmas over here? For Thanksgiving here, yeah.
I'm going to a girlfriend's house. Their family life got complicated over the summer, so
yeah.
I'm going to spend Thanksgiving with a girlfriend with my daughter.
Good.
So it'll be lovely. I mean, she's my best friend. We've been friends for ages. She's a family to me, so
it'll be nice.
I'm having Thanksgiving with my friend family.
That's
so
a good
it'll be
thing.
Lovely. Yes,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
A couple of weeks ago, my second grandson celebrated his first birthday.
Aww.
Wesley Joseph Jurek.
Aww.
And I got him a starter kit for Thomas the Tank Engine.
Nice.
Because he's into railroading and that.
Perfect.
His younger uncle got him an engineer's hat.
Aww.
You know, with the oil can, you know, and all of
yes.
that stuff. And he's got him a whistle that sounds like a train whistle,
there's
you know.
There's nothing better than that age.
It
is
terrific.
So precious.
It really is.
Oh,
it's good.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
So what are we doing this week?
Well, we've got Dr. Mark Panisi from the University of Oregon, who is going to be talking about his research on DNA. He's looking at inherited eye conditions that affects will help the doctors find a way to head off the possibility of losing their vision in the future.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
He works with Dr. Fishman once in a while.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
Sounds like similar research
and
there.
And then...
Then we are going to look at the Chicago's Children's Museum special performance of the Helen Keller story. Ooh.
Yep.
I didn't know about that.
Brett had it. Brett went over to...
Of course he did.
...to take a look at it and see what it's like. So he's
nice.
Going to give us a review.
He'll give us the rundown.
Yep, exactly.
And then I'm going to give you a Thanksgiving stuffing recipe, a nice, healthy, delicious version of your Thanksgiving stuffing to head off into the holidays.
It's not cornbread, is it?
No.
Thank God.
I mean, you can use cornbread if you
no.
want. Clearly, you don't want...
Well, no.
You have very strong opinion about your corn.
Oh,
your stuffing.
About my stuffing.
Yes,
no,
you do.
No cornbread.
Okay.
My sister-in-law, that's all she ever made was cornbread stuffing.
Oh, so do you not like it or are you just
I don't like it.
Okay.
I just don't like it.
Okay.
To me, it's too dry.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, it's too dry.
I can see that. All right, yeah, no cornbread stuffing
not
on
for,
this
if,
show.
If you're having it, I'll bring my own.
Okay. That's it. And finally, Tom and Brian are back with an idea of what's new in the Tools for Living store.
Yeah.
So we're wrapping it up.
I think we got a good show.
I do, too.
Well, I'll tell you what. Hang on a second. We'll get over to Dr. Mike Panisi. And I wonder if he's having lasagna or ravioli on Thanksgiving.
Ooh.
I forgot to ask him.
Well, like you say that like it's a normal thing to have lasagna and ravioli.
Oh, it is. Italian house, yeah.
Oh, Panisi, yeah.
I'll tell you more about it afterwards.
Okay.
I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
We'll be back with Dr. Panisi and what was tradition in the Italian household when I was married to a really close Italian family.
1.4 million people in Illinois really want to work but can't. If they get jobs, they could lose their Medicaid health coverage, and private insurance is difficult to obtain. This is the reality for people with disabilities. The Health Benefits for Workers with Disabilities program can help. HBWD is a state program that provides health insurance for working individuals with disabilities. Call 800-226-0768 or visit hbwdillinois.com. Don't let your disability keep you from working.
Welcome to a feature on the program that we talked about. It's got to be at least a year ago, maybe even a little bit longer. Mark Panisi, how are you, Mark? Good morning, Dr. Mark Panisi.
Good morning.
You were on the air with us, and you're not only a MD, PhD, but you are probably a researcher and instructor over at the University of Oregon. And we're going to talk a little bit about what it is that this project that's so exciting is going to open the door, maybe hopefully, for quite a few people. We have at the Lighthouse here the Pangaea Center for Inherited Retinal Research, and that's exactly what you're doing with this project. You, along with Sparks Corporation, are putting together a plan so that people who have a genetic problem can see exactly what's going on. It'll help you guys, too, to determine what's happening. How did you get to this point?
Well, you know, just a little bit about myself. I'm an inherited retinal degeneration specialist practicing at the KCI Institute at Oregon Health and Science University. And I've been practicing in this field for about 10 years, and I primarily see patients with inherited retinal dystrophies.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working with Sparks Therapeutics for the last few years, mainly just as a consultant, but Sparks is one of the companies that has been involved in some of the seminal gene therapy for inherited retinal dystrophies, and they recently completed one of the first phase 3 clinical trials for a blinding disease called Leber congenital amaurosis due to mutations in the gene called RPE65. And one of the things that they realized, you know, in thinking about bringing this treatment to the market, was that there are many patients out there who might have these mutations and might be eligible for this treatment, but because they had never had any genetic testing, they wouldn't necessarily be aware that they would be eligible for this treatment. And one of the reasons that patients haven't had genetic testing is that it's often very expensive, as well as in the past, a lot of people with inherited retinal dystrophies have been told that there's really nothing we can do for you, and so they visit their doctor, they go home, and they don't go back. But, you know, things are really changing now because hopefully in the next year we'll have one of the first approved treatments, and there are many other clinical trials going on for different gene therapies for other retinal diseases. But the thing that's really important is that these therapies are specific to whatever your gene is. And so you really need to know what your genetic mutation is, because as we start to add therapies to our arsenal, we'll need to match them up. And so I think what Sparks realized is that it was really important to have a way of finding these patients. And, you know, they listened to the doctors on this because they could have just tested for the few mutations that they have therapies for, but they realized that it would really be a great service to patients to test for more than just one or two genes, but to actually look at a panel of genes. And so the idea with the ID, your IRD, which is inherited retinal dystrophy, is to actually offer genetic testing to qualified patients at no cost to them. And they have a panel of about 30 of the most common genes that are involved in inherited retinal dystrophies, and most specifically for retinitis pigmentosa and a few other choice diseases. And they recently launched a website that patients can go to, and there's a short survey that you take, and you answer a few questions, and if you qualify, you can get in touch with their patient liaison. And then in coordination with a retinal inherited degeneration doctor, you can get this testing ordered. And they've also been very generous in the fact that included in part of the program is genetic counseling. So once you get the result back, there is a number that you can call, and this testing is being done through Prevention Genetics, but you'll actually be matched up with a genetic counselor who can help explain the results to you.
Okay. That sounds really, you know, I was talking to Dr. Fishman about what the clinic does, and I used to have a producer who had a inherited retinal disease, but there was something that came out, and I think Sparks did it a few years back, and she didn't qualify because there's so many different strains of these particular diseases that can affect the retina. That's what you're going to be looking for, right? Multiple DNA or traits of this retinal problem.
Exactly. So when we talk about inherited retinal dystrophies, they really come in, you know, very many different flavors. The most common is probably retinitis pigmentosa, which is a disease that affects the rods, which are the cells in our eyes that we use at nighttime or, you know, in dim lighting. But it also can affect the cones, which are the cells that we use in the daytime and for color vision. And so retinitis pigmentosa is what we call a rod cone dystrophy, in that it typically will affect both of these cells, and it's a progressive disorder. And in many patients, they lose visual fields, so they lose their peripheral vision, and that can, in the long term, lead to a tunnel vision-like effect. But there are other inherited retinal diseases as well, some that affect your central vision, like Stargardt's dystrophy. And, you know, if we add up all the different retinal dystrophies, there's probably, you know, maybe 150 different genes that can cause these retinal dystrophies. This particular panel is going to look at 30 of the most common genes. So it's not a complete, you know, test of the most rare diseases, but it's really looking at the most common genes that are involved in retinitis pigmentosa. And I think it's really a great opportunity because, you know, testing such as this would probably cost somebody about $1,000.
Right.
And the fact that people can, you know, sign up for this, and if they qualify, it doesn't cost them anything. It really is a great opportunity for people who have never had genetic testing in the past.
What is going to be some of the qualifications you're looking for?
Yeah, so the best way to get some of the facts is that they've actually set up a website, and it's called IDYourIRD.com, and they have some screening questions on there. As I mentioned, it's primarily going to be for patients who have not had genetic testing or don't have a positive result in the past, and then patients who have a rod cone type of dystrophy. And the program is such that you do need approval from your doctor. So you have to actually go and see your doctor and make sure that they're on board with this test, and then sort of together you can submit for the testing.
Sure. And when you say doctor, you're talking about their ophthalmologist.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, many people have ophthalmologists. There are specialists or inherited retinal degeneration specialists like Dr. Fishman or myself. And I think for patients who have these rare diseases, it really is a great opportunity to see one of these specialists. Now, you know, not everyone has the ability to do that because we're not exactly the most common types of doctors.
Yes,
and,
we are.
And if you live in a small town, you may not necessarily have access to an inherited retinal disease specialist. But your other, you know, there are other doctors, you know, retina specialists who could probably also assist in that. Although I would encourage people, if you've never seen an inherited retinal degeneration specialist, it might be worth a trip you know, to a regional center to at least get seen once by somebody with that expertise.
When you were talking about retinitis pigmentosa, there's a company down in the suburbs of Los Angeles that I want to say Second Sight or Second Sense, and they've been doing some research as well. Is what they're doing similar to what you're doing, or are they looking more for a cure than they are for the research end of it, and to determine how it all gets started and you know, where it comes from and who has what?
So Second Sight is a little bit different. They're the company that is behind the artificial retinal prosthesis system, or the Argus 2.
That is an
artificial retina, and that's really geared at patients who have almost no vision or just bare light perception of vision.
Sure.
And so it's an actual silicone chip that is surgically implanted into the eye on top of the retina and electrically stimulates the remaining cells in the retina and gives you back some, you know, very basic vision.
Sure.
It's like a 60 electrode array. And
okay.
So you can maybe see some shapes and you know, things like doorways. So that's a little bit of a different, you know, program. I think, you know, this program is really aimed at helping people identify the genetic mutations. And as I mentioned, that's going to be very important as gene therapies start coming out.
Mm-hmm.
We need to know which patients have which mutations so that we can match them up with different programs. And at first, many of these are going to be clinical trials. But eventually, some of these will progress on to being approved treatments.
Did you, does nationality or ethnic background make a difference in what type of inherited retinal disease a person might have?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. We see many of these retinal degenerations around the world, you know, regardless of ethnicity, although there are some variations from country to country where one disease might be more common in one country versus another country, or a specific mutation might be more common in one region or ethnic population, mm-hmm. As compared to other places. But, you know, by and large, these are diseases that are seen throughout the world.
As far as the treatment, or to get the sample for the panel, is it a difficult procedure, or is it just an injection, or what?
It's just a blood draw, typically.
Oh.
You can also actually use saliva, and essentially you spit into a little tube, and those are the two options for the sample collection.
Okay, so it's nothing like this. Some people would say, oh, they're going to stick me in my eye with a needle. No, that's not.
No. I mean, this is something, you know, typically they can actually look at the blood cells or the lymphocytes to get the DNA.
I gotcha.
To do the testing. And, you know, the other thing that's worth mentioning is, you know, sometimes people get a little uncomfortable when you talk about genetic testing, that, you know, they're going to discover something that you may not want to know. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, one important thing to know about this panel is that we're only really looking at these 30 retinal genes. So they're not going to be looking at other genetic information.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, everything is confidential between you and your provider.
Sure. Makes sense. Now, where are you going to be doing it, in the Chicago area?
I believe this program will be available, you know, nationally. So I do believe you have to be a U.S. citizen to qualify, but it's essentially, if you go to the website and get the information there, they have a patient liaison who can answer people's mm-hmm. questions about the initiative, and will help them, you know, understand the consenting process for that. And then the second step would be a visit to your doctor. And then the final step would be getting the sample and sending that off. And it takes a little time to get the results back, probably about a month, but maybe a little bit longer.
Sure.
And once those results come back, there will be the option to talk with a genetic counselor. And, you know, I think one thing, you know, that's important to understand is the kinds of results that we get back. So there's different things that could happen. We could test the 30 genes, and we may come back with a positive result where mm-hmm. we say, we are highly, you know, certain that you have this particular gene, and you have a mutation or two mutations in this particular gene, and this is likely the cause of your retinal degeneration.
Okay.
It's also possible that the test could come back and it could be negative, in that we looked at these 30 genes and we didn't find anything that looks like a mutation. And as I mentioned earlier, there are probably 150 different genes, so
sure.
we're not testing every single one. So it is possible that the test comes back negative, and that could be because maybe your mutation is in, you know, one of the other 120 genes that we didn't look at.
Right.
And at that point, there are other options, and that's, you know, there is other commercial testing that looks at larger numbers of genes, as well as research testing. And that's something people can discuss with their doctor, of, you know, how they want to proceed
mm-hmm.
After that. And then finally, sometimes the results come back as what we call inconclusive. And that means that we found something, but we're not totally sure. It may be the culprit, but we don't have enough information to be 100% sure.
Right.
Or we found one mutation, but typically we need to find two mutations to really have what we call a solved case. And, you know, in that situation, that information is often helpful, but it may not be absolutely conclusive.
Well, if they want to contact someone to arrange for the test, can they go through like this Pangier Center, or do they have to go to the website to start with?
Well, I think the website is really probably the best place to get started.
Okay.
And that's ID yourird.com because they really have all the different information, and they have a four-question screening that you can take to see if you would be eligible for this program.
How would they Google that if they didn't catch the website right away?
You could probably Google inherited retinal disease gene testing initiative.
Okay. So that they've got a way to do it. Well, I'll tell you what, Doctor, I appreciate you taking the time to join us this morning. And it sounds like the more I talk to the researchers and the professionals working in the field, the more it sounds like, you know, there's a word out that there more blindness is going to increase by the year 2050. I think you and your colleagues are trying to make it that gets pushed even further back than 2050. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. We'll put the website, we'll put the website up on ours, and then we'll go from there.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and have a great day.
Good. You do the same thing. Dr. Mark Parisi, who is doing some fabulous research on inherited retinal diseases. The show's The Beacon. We'll be back with more after this.
This is the story of Daniel, who was born 2 months early. His lungs weren't ready. His heart wasn't ready. His parents could only hope that one day he would leave the hospital healthy, and they would all live happily ever after. Daniel's is just one of the more than 500,000 stories of babies born prematurely last year. You can help the March of Dimes stop premature birth and bring more babies home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.com. Working together for stronger, healthier babies.
So.
Yes.
Christmas Italian style.
Ravioli or lasagna?
Well, yeah, my father-in-law preferred ravioli. Do you know my late wife, my sister-in-law, and my mother-in-law used to make anywhere between 500 and 700 ravioli.
Oh my!
Right before
gosh.
Christmas, and they would store them. You know, they would freeze them.
Right.
Some of them were cheese, and cheese were some, and then the others were spinach and meat.
Oh my gosh!
And she made homemade gravy that was with neck bones.
Right.
Sausage in there, brajol. I mean, it made you mouth water just to think about it.
I bet.
You know, not so much on the garlic bread and that. That's more of an American thing,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So we used to have regular Italian bread. You know that long loaf?
Yeah.
We used to have the long loaf, cut it up, and put lots of butter on the little pieces and that, you know.
Oh,
so.
My God. That sounds divine. There's nothing better than fresh-made pasta.
Oh, it's... And she used to make her own homemade.
Oh, yeah. No, I got that. Yeah. I'm sure. Like, absolutely from scratch with a little ravioli machine.
And then she had the thing to cut it,
right.
You know. Yeah, yeah.
Man, that is time intensive, though. 500 to 750 raviolis.
Yeah, it would take them 3 days.
I'm sure.
Would take
oh, but I'm sure
days.
They were
oh,
so good.
Oh, they were so good.
Yeah, I can imagine.
They were so, so good. Today, I think she'd make some of the new ones.
What are the new
ones? The new flavors, like the shrimp or,
yeah.
or the you know,
artichoke
crab.
And, yeah.
You know,
there's
artichoke and that. Yeah, because he loved artichoke, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been a good thing.
Ooh, I love artichoke.
Yep. What did we do for dessert? I can't remember.
Oh, man. Tiramisu?
No.
Is that that's an Italian thing.
Yeah, but that was brought. Oh, people would bring pies.
Yeah.
Just a regular pie.
Bring
you
pies.
Know, type of thing. And then we would have appetizers.
Mm.
Unbelievable. Man. I mean, the meal would start at 1 o'clock and not end until 7.
That's and you're eating just
and
like
you're
6
eating.
Hours straight. You know what? Here's the thing. I've been on a weight loss journey. I've lost 22 pounds. I went to the doctor this morning. I've lost 22 pounds in the last, since beginning of June.
Sure.
But you know what? You have to have those days where you just throw it to the wind and just eat. Just
eat.
Because you know what? That's how you get successful in being healthy.
Yes.
And weight loss is not, I mean, just go, a day is not going to kill you. And you know what? Those diehard hardcores that it's like, oh, well, you got to, and
no.
Granted, I am guilty of that, but
right.
Like you got to do the low fat this and the substitute this.
No.
You know, I get it. And there's some health factors involved in that in terms of feeling good. But at the same time.
Yep.
Some days you just have to say,
I don't give a
care.
I'm doing it,
Thank
yeah.
you for saying that.
That's
I'm doing
right.
it. I mean, when I was home over Thanksgiving, or the Veterans Day, the early Thanksgiving, man, I ate like three pieces of cake, and maybe that's a little overkill, but I was not messing around. It was my day. I was going to enjoy it, and I did, man.
I know what happened. My mom.
Yes.
When she was still, you know, able to remember things and that.
Right.
Used to make a bundt cake with yellow dough with pistachio pudding in it.
Ooh.
And then she had this frosting. It was like a hard frosting.
Okay.
With sprinkles.
Uh-huh.
Oh, everybody looked forward to her cake. Oh, that cake would go.
Oh, I'm sure.
It had no problem being eaten up, believe me.
Oh,
it
was, I can imagine.
It was terrific. But anyway, enough about food.
Oh, man,
oh, well,
really?
We'll talk more. We'll talk more. Because tomorrow, you know, being Thanksgiving, so. But right now, you didn't hear about the, you know, I didn't either until Brett brought it up, about the Children's Museum, the Children's Theater doing that. So
how great is that?
I think that's terrific.
I
Unfortunately,
love it so
it's
much.
Passed right now.
Oh.
But it's good to get a review.
Yeah.
And to see what that story
it
was
might
all
come
about.
Around again.
Yeah, you never know. You know, so we here we with Brett Shishkoff doing his critique of the Helen Keller story.
Love it.
For the Children's Theater.
Hello there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff. I am back once again with a review of what's around town and what's accessible for us who are blind and visually impaired. I ended up going out a couple weeks ago to A Light in the Dark at the Chicago Children's Theater, which is actually a story based around Anne Sullivan and Helen Keller and their relationship and how it started. This was actually done strictly through dance, so there was no dialogue. So obviously I was a little nervous going into this with it being strictly audio described, and was I going to be able to get what the story was about? I was actually able to. The audio describer did a very good job. He was very good at describing the movements of the bodies of the people who were on stage and then how they were interacting with each other and interacting with the set. We did have a touch tour beforehand, so we were able to check out what was on stage and what they were going to be interacting with throughout the performance. The performance itself was about 45 minutes long, and I think with having such a detailed touch tour, this one was a little bit more detailed, a lot longer than what I've been accustomed to at the other theaters around the city. It really did give me, at least, very good understanding of what was coming down the line once the performance started. This was actually my first time having a full performance actually described for audio described dance performance. I've gone to plays and there'll be parts of it with the musicals and whatnot. There's dancing and they'll describe it. But being able to have the entire story told through dance and have it audio described and understand what the story was, I think bodes well for how the audio describer was able to prepare for it. The Chicago Children's Theater is really a very interesting place because it's not just for dance specifically, and their programming is geared towards kids to enjoy it as well, but they also have a lot that's for adults too. So when I went, it was me and a couple other adults, but there are a few kids there who really seem to enjoy it as well. They have question and answers with the cast after the show ends, and you're able to kind of talk to them about how did they prepare for these specific characters. And for me, it was interesting because when you're sitting there and you're not being able to see what's going on, you really have to rely on the audio description. So just to give you a little bit of a glimpse of what Helen Keller had to go through, you were relatively lost, and she needed Anne Sullivan to be able to make the pieces fit. And so she would teach her how to eat, and there was parts where they're sitting at a table and she and Helen Keller would basically grab everybody's food on their plate, and Anne Sullivan would, you know, show her by touch of that's not the proper way of doing things. You need to use a fork and a knife and a spoon, and being able to teach her the proper etiquette. So this was kind of just one of the many things that Ann Sullivan did, but this was the huge part and the huge turning point for Helen Keller to actually realize that she was doing things wrong, but none of her family actually let her know that these were wrong behaviors because they felt so bad for her and didn't really know how to discipline her for the things that she was doing wrong. If you actually decided to go to the Chicago Children's Theater with your kids, or if you have grandchildren, or, you know, you were an uncle or an aunt and you have your nieces and nephews you'd like to take, I do highly encourage you to go. The entire staff that was there was very helpful. They basically, right when I walked in, took me right in to if I needed my tickets, if I needed to be able to get into the theater. They helped me with all of that, getting around the stage. They helped me to explain the different parts of the stage, the props they were going to be using, went into detail of why these things are important. So where there were pieces of the performance that I might have not understood, I was able to go back to the specific things that they explained in the touch tour to help fill in those gaps that maybe were missing. They do offer camps and classes for kids as well. So I do encourage that if you do have some kids who are interested in getting into acting or performing arts of any sort, this might be a good starting point for you to go into that. One of the nice things is they seem to have a wide variety of opportunities for your kids. Even if they're older kids, they also have a lot of programs for the toddlers. So if you have 2-3 year old kids, there's lots of dance and music, being able to do it with your parents, so with the parents or guardian. So if you're grandma and grandpa and want to take your grandchild in and have like a campfire session, they have that type of program there. So all in all, they have a lot of really fun things they're doing there. It's not extremely serious like this one was. A lot of the other stuff that I saw coming down the road, they have 100 dresses coming in January, which looks like it's a little bit of a more comedy, having fun type of play that looks like it's for 6 years and older. They did have one that just ended that was for 2 and older, using puppets and that type of thing. But they do have a few more of those coming down the line throughout the year. February is another one that looks like it'll be a fun, interesting type of performance with some shadow puppets and whatnot. So keep an eye open. You can go to their website. It's ChicagoChildrensTheater.org, which is ChicagoChildrensTheater, which is TheatreOrg. It is located on 1016 North Dearborn. I'm sorry about that. My experience all the way around was very, very fun. I got to meet a couple of the kids who were also blind and visually impaired and got to talk to them about their experience. And they've gone to quite a few of these performances at the Chicago Children's Theater. And it was good to hear their experience and seeing the mom being able to bring them out. They enjoyed speaking with me, and I'm looking forward to going back there again, hopefully with my niece, and I actually have a new nephew now. So that will be a theater I will be visiting, not just by myself, but with my two little buddies that hopefully will enjoy the performances just as much as I have. This is Brett Shishkoff. This was a review around town of the Chicago Children's Theater, A Light in the Dark. I look forward to talking to you all soon again.
I feel like it's all on my shoulders. How am I going to take care of my parents if they develop an eye disease like glaucoma? Glaucoma is the leading cause of blindness in African Americans and Hispanics in the United States. And what about my kids? Will they inherit it? not to mention my risk factor. I'm really concerned, and I need some answers.
Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for answers, including a free brochure on glaucoma.
And by the way,
yeah,
we would also do a Polish Christmas Eve.
Oh, man.
And that consisted of Polish sausage, sauerkraut that was made by one of the cousins. He made the homemade sauerkraut.
Mm.
Mashed potatoes, corn. We'd have the only thing not Italian was Italian beef. And we would have tons. And when I say tons, I mean maybe at least 10 to 15 pounds of breaded shrimp.
What?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my.
Yes, ma'am.
And that we would, is indulgent.
With the cocktail sauce and everything,
mm-hmm.
I would avoid a lot of the other stuff just because I had a chance to
just
have
the shrimp. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, some of the... my mouth is watering.
Yeah, I know. I'm starving right now.
pierogi she would make.
Uh-huh.
But she would make that while she was making the ravioli.
Okay.
So she would make a farmer's cheese and potato.
Uh-huh.
And she would have sauerkraut and mushroom.
Oh, boy.
Oh, and they were so good.
Yeah.
They were just so good.
Oh, man.
You know, and whatever cakes were left over from Christmas Eve, we'd have at Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So it was good. But now it is time for... the healthy eating segment of our program.
Healthy eating after we just talked about throwing it all
food.
The way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you know what? There's a lot of these recipes that you can actually substitute healthy things, and it doesn't compromise the taste or the
flavor.
Well,
you got
one
coming up now for the for the stuffing.
Yeah, it is. And this is a homemade stuffing that I've actually made this, and it is divine. So
without any further ado.
Any further ado.
Let us turn up the beat.
Thank you, sir. We're going to discuss store-bought stuffing right in time for things. Not store-bought stuffing. What am I saying? Homemade
it's my
stuffing.
Favorite.
Yeah, of course it is. You and the jelly cranberry sauce.
Oh, God, the best.
Blech. Anyway, homemade stuffing. So, you know, what you're going to do, because a lot of times if you do the store-bought stuffing, it's loaded with butter, it's loaded with processed bread, it's loaded with, like, you know, my same lecture that I give every week here. So in order to kind of avoid some of that and do a little healthier spin on your homemade stuffing,
right,
you're going to just simply saute celery and onions and whatever other vegetables you want, carrots or water chestnuts. I mean, whatever you want, throw it in there.
Ooh.
I know, right? It puts a nice crunch in there, like a great texture. Yeah,
oh.
It's really nice. So throw whatever you want in there. Go ahead and saute it for 1 or 2 minutes in some olive oil or canola oil. And then you're going to combine the mixture with cubes of whole grain bread, moisten with low-sodium chicken broth or veggie broth or whatever your preference is, and add your favorite herbs before baking it. And then just throw it in the oven and crisp that baby up. And
you get that nice crispy top.
Exactly. Moist on the inside, nice and crispy on the outside. Yeah,
God,
so it's still delicious, right? And it eliminates all the butter. It eliminates the, you know, cream that's...
God, I can't wait till tomorrow.
I know, right?
Jesus, it's going to be so good.
It's going to be amazing.
My terrific. And then, you know, what I like about having extra turkey.
Yes.
You get a Kaiser roll.
Oh, yes.
Maybe about 3 hours later. And you put I like Miracle Whip.
Oh, yeah. I used to eat Miracle Whip back in the day. I really like Miracle Whip.
So I put Miracle Whip on there. Then I put the bread stuffing.
Nice.
Turkey.
Nice.
Okay. And then a piece of the gel. Cranberry.
Right.
Actually, it goes below the turkey.
Lop a little piece off there.
Yep. Uh-huh. And then you put the Miracle Whip on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of squish it down.
So good.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, it's like dying and seeing you know who.
Yes. Yeah. Boy, we have been talking.
I'm drooling over here.
You know what? It's okay. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving, so we're okay.
I think this is
absolutely what we should be discussing right now. I'm on board.
Good for you.
Yeah. I'm going to make a peanut butter and chocolate vegan tort, and I made this over the weekend I had a bunch of friends over for dinner on Friday night, and I made this peanut butter and chocolate tort with a gingerbread crust.
Right.
Holy mother of you know who.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, and nobody knows it's vegan, you know, and that's the beauty of it is nobody realizes that they're actually
vegan. If you don't know, right.
And you don't go in with any preconceived notions or, you know, you taste it, go, oh, I can taste this. No. And people were like diving headfirst into this thing, asking me for the recipe. Yep. So I'm going to make that for my friend's Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Oh, that sounds good.
So good.
There's a lady across the street from where my mom lived, and she makes Italian cookies. Lemon Italian cookies with the hard frosting.
Yes.
And I've got to get a recipe from my sister-in-law, but I got to have toffee squares.
Yeah. So good.
It is really, really good. I mean, store-bought cookies.
Nah. Yeah, no.
And if anybody wants to volunteer making cookies for me, that's totally true. You know what? I also like the crescents, the almond crescent
cookies.
Those
are good, too. You know, Whole Foods has a whole, like, international cookie bar, basically, with fresh baked cookies.
Oh, do
and,
they?
And they have those types of cookies there. The lemon, the Italian cookies and the crescent cookies. Yep. And it's still, I have to avoid Whole Foods for that reason.
Because of the
So good.
I'd sometimes sooner have that than anything else.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, you can keep the dinner. I'll take the
cookies. Right, just give me the sweets. Yep.
That's the whole thing. Speaking of sweets.
Yes.
We've got our visit with the gentlemen who know exactly what's going on.
The sweetest men on earth. Come on.
Don't go that far.
I was piggybacking on your segue. Speaking of sweets.
Oh, I see. Okay,
the
fine.
Sweetest men on earth. See, I learned from you, the master of segues.
Yeah.
All right.
The sultan of segues.
The sultan of segues.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's one of the engineers at NBC used to call.
The sultan of segues. It's the best nickname I've ever heard.
Honest to God. And I used to have a friend of mine who worked at NBC.
Uh-huh.
And he always, he was a staff announcer, and he would do a music show sometimes late night.
Uh-huh.
And he'd have to meet the hourly at the top, the NBC News. So he had this thing where he talked so much that he misses count on the end of the hour. So he'd have like maybe 4 minutes left.
Oh, jeez.
So he could play a song, you know, if he wanted to. So he got the song all set with the record turner. And then he says, I'll talk up the song. So, okay. The record turner eventually discovered that he doesn't even have to cue up the record.
Really?
Because they used to call him Talk Him Up Handsome.
Hanson.
His name was Millard Hanson.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of my role models.
Nice.
Really nice guy.
Very nice.
So without any further ado, let's head over to Tom's Corner and see what's brewing over there.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Tom's Corner. And today we thought that we would cover some of the items that are available in the store for the holidays. And Tom Persky's here to do that. Good morning, Tom.
Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, as always. And yourself?
Fine. It's definitely getting to be that time where we have to start thinking about the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our retail store has been really a great place for lots of people who have family members who are visually impaired or blind. And because we have over almost 1,000 different items that they can look at and so forth. But we've selected some of them that would be the most appropriate or try to kind of different price categories also depending on your budget too.
Okay.
So we thought we'd go down a little bit of the list. If you'd like to see our selected list, you can actually email us at store@ChicagoLighthouse.org. So store@ChicagoLighthouse.org. And we can email that list to you so you won't have to write it out and you don't have to check it twice.
But you still have to be good.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So one of the things at the top of the list is called the Hold Everything Wallet. And it's a woman's kind of a longer, beautiful wallet that has many different pockets for holding currency of different types. And each of the little pockets Velcro's closed. So you have your singles, your fives, your tens, and your twenties. There's also slots to hold the bills open if you use that particular method. On the other side is the nice places to hold all the credit cards and so forth. And then the whole thing closes with a Velcro. It's really nice. It's a $25 item, and it's been going like hotcakes in the store. So we thought we'd put that right on the list. We've got, you know, these giant 2017 calendars. We have one for the wall, one for your desktop, which would be like, they have one that's really nice that I like. It's the whole week on two pages. And so those are very popular, of course, this time a year. Those just different bold line paper, bold line pens are really kind of convenient and very low cost. Now, on some of our higher cost items, we thought we would pick maybe our two best sellers for the video magnification. And many people think of just a magnifying glass as something that would help. But what's becoming more and more popular are these video magnifiers, which I'm using right now, actually, to read this list. Mm-hmm. And it blows up from 2 times to 22 times the normal size and can make it brighter. It has a handle or a tilt stand. This one I'm using is called the Explore 5. It's made by Humanware. All over the internet, you'll see it for $749. We've been selling it for $595. And we looked on the internet, there's no one selling it lower. So throughout the country, you can actually purchase that through our store.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Humanware Explore 5. And as I said, it's $595. Now, there's a smaller one that has, instead of a 5-inch screen, a 3.5-inch screen. Some people just want a pocket-sized video magnifier that's small, easily fits in your shirt pocket. And our famous one is called the Butterfly. And the reason it's called the Butterfly is in the back, there's a little stand that looks like two butterfly wings that holds the item at a tilt, which is kind of nice. Or if you hold it flat in your hand, you just squeeze the wings down, and then you can hold it up to see a price tag in the store or read a menu in a restaurant. The Butterfly sells for $295, and that's a really popular item, too. So I thought we would mention those for those who have a more extravagant budget.
Okay.
Exactly. So we have some really neat, like, playing cards of all different types. I think that those are, you know, bingo cards. Those are all part of what we normally carry. We have this, the Larry light. I know we've talked about on the show before.
Right.
And then they have Big Larry now.
Okay.
And Big Larry is pretty neat. I think it's kind of fantastic because it's heavy and it's easy to hold. And it throws out an amazing amount of light for those, like, with, let's say if you have retinitis pigmentosa or glaucoma, you have difficulty and the sun goes down, you're trying to go up the sidewalk and you're trying to find the door and the keyhole and all that. Mm-hmm. This thing throws out an amazing amount of light. It would help guide you in those kind of situations. So there's a smaller one, and then there's a big one that really throws out a lot of light, which I think is really pretty neat. We also have a new Otlight. Many people are familiar with the Otlight, which kind of sits on your desk, and you open it by bringing up the lamp itself, and it throws light down, like for your keyboard, or we call it a task light. If you're chopping vegetables or something in the kitchen, you need light right where you're sitting. This one's battery operated, so it actually charges it, and it's very lightweight. You can pick it up and move it all over the kitchen or bring it over to your desk and carry it around, and it's really become a popular one. We've had battery operated lamps in the past that were not that good in quality or whatever, but mm-hmm. You know, people always ask for them. This particular one is $35, and it's called the Lightweight Travel Light. So I think these are some of the things I think that would be options for you if you have someone in your family that is visually impaired and would like to know what's out there to help us.
Yeah, just a few of the 1,000 items that you have in the store.
Exactly, exactly.
And you can get that list at store at chicagolighthouse.org.
Store at chicagolighthouse.org. You just say, send me the holiday list, gift items list.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You can
now,
also call, right?
No, okay.
1-800-919-3375. 1-800-919-3375. Noreen is there most of the time. She's also has low vision like I do. And so we are experts because we live it every day. And she can help you find something for you or your family member.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, before we get out of here, I understand there's an update. New Eyes has a major software update.
They do. The New Eyes was the video goggles that we've had some people come and take a look at through, a look through, I should say, right? They're small, lightweight, look like a pair of thick sunglasses that have video cameras and displays, and you can go from 2 times to 10 times the video image, and so they work up close, they work across the room. These are new to the marketplace of video headborne devices, and these are expensive devices. We've talked on this show before about the eSight glasses, and now the New Eyes is something new. What they have done has part of, I think, the New Eyes, which is kind of interesting, is it's upgradable.
Mm-hmm.
And so this technology that people get frustrated if they can't upgrade it. So this new upgrade involves what we call OCR, or being able to do optical character recognition. And so not only can you enlarge the text, but if your eyes get tired or you feel like you're reading kind of slow, you can actually push a button and the glasses will actually take a picture of the whole page and then begin within a few seconds to read it out loud to you, which is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
And that is actually built into the system, which is pretty amazing. They have other upgrades that they've done where they have better image stabilization now in the camera. They also worked on what we call voice command. Those glasses were, when they first came out several months ago, we just say, glasses make bigger. Glasses make bigger. And then every time you'd say it, it gets larger. So it wasn't working 100%. Now it's definitely working, and they have more things that you can say to your glasses. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
We're going to be like talking to our phones and our glasses and our thermostat. And what else is going to be next? I don't know, but it's pretty amazing stuff. So if you'd like to come and actually do an evaluation with Luke on our staff, he's probably the best one to call for the New Eyes or the eSight goggles. We don't charge for the evaluation time. It usually takes about an hour.
Okay.
So Luke is 312-997-3649. 312-997-3649, and just make an appointment with him directly. Tell him you'd like to come in and see the New Eyes video goggles. They are currently run at $5,995, and the eSight is $15,000. So hold on to your wallet.
But it's the holidays, so treat right. yourself. Yeah.
Right, right.
All right. Well, thanks for that update on New Eyes and also the list of products there from the store that folks can get a hold of. And as always, he's Tom Persky. I'm Brian Hawkins. This is The Beacon.
So we're going to have a late dinner tomorrow.
You
maybe
are?
About 3 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
You know.
It's not too late.
No, and we invited a friend of Stacy's,
mm-hmm.
and she has teenagers that are going to vacuum everything up.
Yes,
know,
they will.
Because they eat like they're going to the chair.
Yep, yep.
You know, so we're gonna have that.
Nice.
And then I don't know what we're doing for dessert, but I think she's
going to dessert. That'll be something.
It's going to be good. Well, hey, thanks for joining us on our first show on the Internet. Again, if you are joining us maybe by happenstance, you can get us, or maybe you're a regular Wednesday night listener. This is going to be the time when you do get The Beacon from now on. So all you have to do is go to our website, www.chicagolighthouse.org. Look for the Chris Radio link. Look for the date of the program, and that's going to be the 23rd of November, and we'll be good to go. I'm Bill Jury.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
And we will see you back here next week, Saturday. No. Wait a minute. Hold it.
Hold the phone.
God, I thought I was going to make it through.
It's been 8 years of autopilot.
Well, it has been. Yeah.
5, anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see you back here next Wednesday night. Have a very filling and happy Thanksgiving.
Gobble, gobble.